I will not read all of the passage from the beginning. I'm just going to really pick up, start reading where we picked up or left off. But what I want to do real quickly is review the first bits that we had. We actually cut off about, verses 34 to 30, 25 to 34. We were starting that, so that's what I'm going to pick up this morning. But I want to quickly review before that just so we can all get a reference point here. So, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, if you starting in verse 1, there's actually 8 sections to this that I divvied up. These are not gospel truth. You could divvy it up a million different ways. It's just the way that I saw this, and it kind of had some logical groupings here. When he starts in the first 5 verses, he talks about how outside of marriage, there is to be no connection, no contact, either physical, touching, or a commitment. Thinking about people living together and those sorts of arrangements is not to happen. That the word there is used is that we should not touch a woman. A man should not touch a woman. The word touch there is certainly, like I said, it's physical touching, but it also means a commitment or a connection too as well. So that's not to happen outside of marriage. Inside of marriage, though, it's talking about there in verse 3, talking about due benevolence. Certainly that means caring for one another, being concerned for one another, being gracious to one another, but it also means giving each other what each other needs. And that very specifically in this context, excuse my stammering, involves sexual intimacy as well. But again, make sure we understand this cuts both ways. This does not mean, I don't want anybody to use this as a leverage to say, beat somebody over the head for something. It's not that at all. It is absolutely a two-way street, giving to each other as each other has needs. But it also says in verse 5 that we obviously shouldn't defraud one another. We shouldn't withhold from each other company and sexual intimacy, except it be for a time. And it says, talks about fasting and praying, that sometimes we need to draw ourselves aside. He does say in the next verse, this is not a command. This is something that is not only permissible, but it's a good idea. But if you don't do it, you're not wrong, you're not sinning. But he says, there's only exception to this give to each other as we have needs, is to draw aside for a specific time, specifically to give ourselves wholly over to God, to dedicate time aside fasting and prayer. That's that first 5 verses. It's actually pretty packed with, for marriage life, there's a lot of instruction here. If we will follow that, I think it will, I won't say that's the formula for success, but it will make things a lot easier, a lot happier for each of us. And that goes, again, that goes both ways. Don't want to think this is, all the man get what the man wants or all the woman gets what the woman wants, but it goes both ways. Starting in verse 6 through 9, his big message there in those verses is, it is not only permissible, it is okay, it is of God, depending on the circumstance, to be either married or to be single. There is no curse if you're not married. That's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you if you're married. There's nothing either way. He's simply saying that God has called different people to different situations, and those situations are completely in God's hands. That's that section there. Then the third section is basically a reiteration of Jesus' commands in Mark 10, and it's also in Matthew 5, I believe. For some reason that chapter sounds wrong, but it's in the first part of Matthew. I've got Matthew 5 written down, so you want to double check me. But Jesus' command has commands here about marriage and divorce. He has commands about those. And Paul's reiterating those commands, and then he's adding to it in verse 12, which we'll talk about in just a second. But basically, the upshot is, the marriage that you're in, once you're married, you need to stay married. That's essentially the message. And I think I mentioned to you last week, Pastor Byerly did a really good exposition of Mark chapter 10. What was that, maybe 6 months ago on a Wednesday night? And if you want to listen to that, I would recommend. That's a really good explanation of not only what Jesus was saying, but also some practical applications of this from somebody who's, seen this sort of thing. Personally, I've not dealt with, and I know there's some of us in there have dealt with either strained marital relationships or even divorce. So I'm not the guy to help you with that, unfortunately, because I've not been there. Hopefully God will give me the grace to help people like that, because I know that's a painful thing. Bigger point, listen to Preacher Byerly's sermon on that. I would recommend it highly. Very good lesson. Then going to the next section, 12 to 16. I call it split marriages, and I don't know the other way to call it, but it's these marriages where you have one man or one person, the man or the woman, is saved, and the other partner is not saved. And this is where Paul is taking what Jesus' command about marriage and divorce, he takes that, and he says, I'm adding to that. This is new revelation from God. I want to share this new thing with you. And what this new thing is if you're married, you're already married, you're both unsaved, and you become saved, you get saved, you're not to leave the spouse unless they kick you out of the house, in which case, you know, obviously you're free, he says. But you're not to seek to depart from that person because you got gotten saved, which is a huge departure from the Jewish law. Under Judaism, there was no allowance for people of unlike beliefs, unlike races. None of that was allowed. Whereas under grace, because we all come from nothing, we all come from sin. We're now in a situation where actually we could use this potentially for an evangelism situation. So we can actually use this to he talks about sanctifying the other spouse. And this is an opportunity for us to show the gospel in its truest form. And instead of separating, we're to stay with those with an unmarried spouse. Or excuse me, not unmarried spouse, unsaved spouse. Try that one, unmarried spouse. Then in verse 17-24, basically saying, use the resources God has given to you. He's not very specifically addressing marriage or singleness here. He's just generally giving an argument. One thing you've got to watch for Paul, and not because he's tricky here, but just because you need to be careful and read what he's saying. Sometimes he'll do this in other passages, not just here, where he'll make a point. His point is not his main point. It's a supporting point. This is not to say it's not gospel truth. It's not to say it's not from the Holy Spirit. It's not to say it's not true. It's just to say this is not his main point. But he does make this point that if you're circumcised, meaning you are a Jew, he's saying don't try to slough off all your Judaism. Now again, you're not saved by Judaism, and the law is not required. But he's saying don't reject yourself as a Jew and try to be like Gentiles. And the same thing, if you're a Gentile and you're saved, don't reject all your everything because you want to be like a Jew. It's not circumcision or uncircumcision that saves you. It's obviously the blood of Jesus Christ. And his point, and he also says about servants and free men. If you're a servant, don't try to become a free man because that's the only way you can be a believer. No, he's saying if you're a servant, use that for God's glory. If you're a free man, use that for God's glory. So he's making a logical argument here to say, use any resources that God has given you for God's glory. And then he slips into verses 25-34, which is where we'll pick up. Where that becomes a logical argument, I'm going to explain this passage a little deeper, but where that becomes a logical argument, he's saying, use your circumcision or uncircumcision, use your free status or your slave status, use those things for God's glory. The same thing applies to your marital status, whether you're married or unmarried. Now he's, again, very specifically applying that to marriage and saying, use that for God's glory. That's a resource that you have that God's given you. Whether you're married or single, God has given that to you. Use it for his glory. Let's read now in verse 25, and we'll read down to verse 34. That's where we'll pick up this morning. 25. It says, now concerning virgins, specifically virgins could be male or female. Later, virgins does refer to women specifically, but here it's male or female virgins, unmarried people. I have no commandment of the Lord, yet I give you my judgment as one that hath obtained mercy of the Lord to be faithful. I suppose, therefore, that it is good for the present distress, I say, that it is good for a man so to be. Art thou bound to a wife? Seek not to be loosed. Art thou loosed from a wife? Seek not a wife. But, and if thou marry, thou hast not sinned. And if a virgin marry, she hath not sinned. Nevertheless, such shall have trouble in the flesh, but I spare you. But this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remaineth that both they that have wives be as though they had none, and they that weep as though they wept not, and they that rejoice as though they rejoice not, and they that buy as though they possess not, and they that use this world as not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passeth away. But I would have you without carefulness. He that is unmarried careth for the things that belong to the unmarried careth for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife. There is a difference also between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman careth for the things of the Lord, and she may be holy in body and in spirit. But she that is married careth for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. Now, he's very specifically asking us or commanding us to use the resources that we've got, that we've been given from God. Again, very specifically for marriage or married or unmarried state, use that resource. But he mentions over there in verse 26, it is good for the present distress. He was very likely talking about the persecution that would be coming to the church, or maybe even in the middle of right here. The persecution. I mean, this is a time where people would die simply because they were baptized, because they identified themselves with Christ. Think about in your own marriages. I mean, just think about the practical advice that's given here. You presumably love your spouse, husband, wife. You love that person. Can you imagine the kind of stress it would put on a marriage if, by virtue of accepting Christ as your Savior, claiming allegiance to Jesus, you risked your own life, or your wife or husband risked his or her own life? He's saying, and it's just practical here, if allegiance to Christ means, this is a stupid example, but I'll give you this anyway. You ever seen Spider-Man? The movie Spider-Man? You know this movie, Spider-Man? And they find out who Spider-Man really is. What's his name? I should know this. I can't think of his name anyway. Who is it? Peter Parker, thank you. I couldn't think of his name. And they found out who his girlfriend was, right? You know. So what do? They go after his girlfriend. Well, again, that's kind of a silly comic book example. But the truth, there's truth in that. That if I want to get at any one of you, one way I can definitely get at you is go for your spouse. I can go after your spouse. I can attack them. I can hurt them in some way. And if you've got any ounce of blood in you about your significant other, it's going to upset you. And particularly if I'm more powerful somehow and able to destroy your spouse, then you're going to feel really angry. Again, it's just a practical thing here. If it would be better in that circumstance, if you're going to have to give up your life to not have somebody else that's depending on you, would it not be? I think it would be. If I know that I'm going to be potentially have to give up my life in order to serve my God, it would be a better situation, a much better situation, if it was just all me. And when I die, you know, maybe my parents would be upset, but I don't have a wife and children, etc., that's depending on me. And vice versa. Do you at least resonate with that? Is that understandable to us? And so he's talking about this present distress, which is the situation that they were probably in at that time. Well, I know that probably nothing is historical fact that they were in at that time. But he's also, I think, referencing the fact that we ought to have a wartime mentality. I spent a little bit of time at the last lesson talking about we should be on a battleship, not on a cruise ship. You remember that? That's where we're not here to serve our desires and what we want. We're here to fight a battle against evil, against wickedness, against sin. We're here to advance the gospel, not here to, you know, make me feel good. And if we could, and I think that is because I'm speaking to predominantly married people who are in marital relationships. So you're not seeking a spouse, most of you. You know, it's not like you got an option now. You got one, whether you like it or not. You got one, right? Hopefully you like it more than you don't like it. But in that situation, this bad advice to give you to say, it would be better if you weren't married, because that's not what even Paul's saying. He is saying, though, that we need to have a wartime mentality. You're not there in your marriage even, which I'm going to try to hit on this just a second, but you're not in your marriage to make you feel good. You're not in your marriage to make you happy. Now, it will make you happy, and it should make you feel good, but that's not the point. You're there because your marriage is one more weapon, one more piece of ammunition in the battle against the sin and wickedness. He does say that the unmarried can focus on the things of God more. And I think by necessity, married folks do have to mind earthly things a little more, like we just talked about. I've got children. I've got a wife that I've got to take care of. You have a spouse and potentially children in your marriage that you've got to take care of. So there is that. But again, remember, we got to use, what was he saying here? Where was it? Right here. Use every resource we've been given for the cause of Christ, for the glory of God. So if we think about our marriages as just another thing to make us feel good, make us happy, like that big bowl of ice cream. If it's just a big bowl of ice cream to you, then what makes me happy? What makes me feel good? What makes my tongue feel good? My belly full? If that's what it is, then you're going to be thinking about your marriage more than you're going to think about God. But if you can use your marriage, your family, as a resource that God has given to you to praise God, then you can have this wartime mentality. Let's read the next passage, which are verses 35 through 38. It says, "And this I speak for your own profit, not that I may cast a snare upon you, but for that which is comely, and that ye may attend upon the Lord without distraction. But if any man think that he behaveth himself uncomely toward his virgin, if she pass the flower of her age, and need so require, let him do what he will, he sinneth not, let them marry. Nevertheless, he that standeth steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but hath power over his own will, and hath so decreed in his heart that he will keep his virgin, doeth well. So then, he that giveth her in marriage doeth well, and he that giveth her not in marriage doeth better." This talks about a proper relationship between men and women, which kind of sort of reflects back to this first passage, first chunk here. The bigger thing that I wanted to draw your attention to, and this won't take but a second, but I wanted to draw your attention to the fact that he's talking about, yeah, if you're single, you might be better off in a situation where, you know, you could die for your faith. You might that we don't have that connection that you have to take care of, and there's this burden or this chain of sorts to this world. But he says that's not necessarily better. You've not accomplished anything if you stay single so that you can worship God and then go off and commit fornication. You've won nothing. In fact, you've lost. He's saying that's great if you can stay single and you can focus on the work of God. You should do that because that's the gift that God has given you. But the priority here is to obey God's commands. And if you're disobeying God's commands in order to feel more spiritual somehow, it's stupid as that sounds. I think there are people that do that sort of thing, maybe not on this particular topic, but sometimes we'll do things to say, I want to feel spiritual, I want to feel right, I want to feel like I'm doing something better. But in doing that, you ruin it because you've just disobeyed God, either through pride or, I mean, any number of things that you ruin the benefit of it. So his bigger point here is you need to remember, regardless of whether you have this, you could focus more on the things of God as a single person, you've got to remember that God's law says you ought to have a proper relationship between a man and a woman. And if you cannot maintain that as a single person, you better get married, because otherwise, you've broken God's commandments, and that's sin. Go down to the last passage there, verses 39 and 40. The wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth, but if her husband be dead, she is at liberty to marry whom she will, only in the Lord. Those four words are the key words there, only in the Lord. But she is happier if she so abide after my judgment, and I think also that I have the Spirit of God. The key here is, what about if a spouse passes? And unfortunately, every one of us is going to have to deal with that at some point. It's just the sad truth, unless there's some even more unfortunate circumstance where we both pass at the same time. One of us is going to have to deal with where we do not have the other one there. So what do we do? Basically, the same rules apply that have applied throughout this whole passage. There's no new rule. Just basically go back to square one. If you're now find yourself unmarried because your spouse has passed, go back to square one and apply and follow those same rules. You're at liberty to marry, absolutely. But just like we are still in this present distress, we still have this wartime mentality. If you can abide without being married, you should try to do that. But if you can't do that without breaking God's law, you better get married, because that is God's plan. All right. That's the best way I can give you to explain what Paul is saying here. I hope I've not confused more than I have explained. Hope I've explained more than I've confused. But let me give you, as closing for this, a couple of applications that I'd like you to take away from it. Some specifically apply to marriage. Some don't specifically apply to marriage. They're just more broad applications. The first one, which talks, it's referenced here in verse 5, where it talks about how we shouldn't defraud one another except for the consent for a time. And I think I mentioned this last week, but one of the thoughts that keeps coming out to me out of this passage is this idea of self-denial. And actually, this really goes through the whole thing. It's not about me anymore. I'm saved. I'm a believer. It's about Jesus Christ. It's about the gospel. And it's too easy because I've got so many things at my fingertips in this culture that I can do anything I want to. And it's not wrong. Again, don't misunderstand. I'm not talking about wrong things that I'm talking about. I think I mentioned last week, watching television. There's nowhere in the Bible does it say it is wrong to watch television. And you might say, well, there's bad stuff. Well, you can watch good stuff. I mean, there's good stuff on the television, too. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just the fact that it's fine to watch it. And I'm preaching it myself more than I'm you. It's fine to watch it. But sometimes you just don't need to. Not because it's wrong, not because it's bad. It's just because there are more important things in this life. Not even talking about taking care of your kids. Let's say you played with your kids. Let's say you gave your wife what she needed. Everything's taken care of. But say you just want to watch television. Well, it's not about you anymore. It's about the gospel. So what are you doing to advance the cause of the gospel? And again, I'm using television. There's a billion different things. For every person in here, some different little thing that you latch onto. I talked about, I like eating ice cream. Love ice cream. I ate a bowl last night even. Love eating ice cream. There's nothing wrong with ice cream. It's okay. But sometimes you need to say, for the purpose of advancing the cause, and I don't mean to over-spiritualize, because I'm not over-spiritualizing. This is true. If you think, for the purpose of advancing the cause of the gospel, could I withhold some food from my fat belly for just a few minutes? Can I do that? And why do I say that? Because if you think about fasting, which I won't want to go way off on this, because I don't practice this at all. Not because I don't believe in it, just because I tried it one day. I told somebody, I tried this one day. I made it to dinner time, and I had to eat. But if you'll use that and say, those hunger pains, make them think about the fact that you're hungering for the gospel, hungering for Jesus Christ, hungering for truth, and try to use that for that purpose. And it comes out of this because he does say that we should give it is a good thing to give ourselves to fasting and prayer. Why don't I? Because I want what I want. And yeah, it's not wrong. I'm not trying to get something that's wrong. Even sexual intimacy. Just be frank with you. There's nothing wrong with it, particularly between married people. There's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes it might be a good thing to say, you know what, for the purpose of drawing aside, to dedicate myself to God, I'm going to withhold that from myself as well as from my spouse, but for that purpose. Not because I'm mad at them, but because I'm trying to withhold myself from something. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing, in fact, it's a good thing. But I'm trying to withhold myself in order to advance the cause of the gospel. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but it speaks a bunch of volumes to me because I get everything I want unless it's wrong. In fact, I was talking to a guy the other day about alcohol. This guy I work with, he's a believer, a good Christian fella, and we were talking, he doesn't drink alcohol, and I don't drink alcohol, and there's a lot of folks around us that do, and company functions and that sort of thing, it comes up. So we were talking about it, and I told him, I said, I don't not drink alcohol because it's wrong. I mean, now, if you ask me, why don't you drink alcohol? Well, it's wrong, but that's not why. I have no real desire for it, honestly. If I had a desire for it, I would like to think I would say, it's wrong, so I don't drink it. But you see what I'm saying? I said, I don't do it because I wasn't raised doing it. Now, some of you, that might be a different story, and I understand that, and I'm not slamming you for that at all. It's just that's where I am. I don't deny myself alcohol because I'm trying to do something right for God. I deny myself alcohol because, just like I'm not that tire out there, I'm not going out there and licking that tire. There's no desire in me to do that. Why? Now, some of you, I realize, and I don't want me to mock, because I know that some people come from backgrounds where you were, that was a temptation for you, so I realize that. I got other problems, so don't worry. That's not my problem. I got other ones. But my bigger point is I don't deny myself so many things because they're right or wrong or because I want God to be glorified. It's just the way I live, and we need to get past that. I'm spending too much time on that. Let me just keep going here. Priorities, you can't do everything, but you've got to have some main things. So we've got to make sure that there, again, the main thing here, if you read this whole passage, the main thing is not being pure. The main thing is not the main thing is not being pure, not being married, not being single, not being any of those things. The main thing is the gospel. Keep the gospel primary to make sure we can share the gospel, that we are in a position to show people Jesus Christ. Then those other things should fall into place. Then the supremacy of the gospel in all things, which I've already talked about. There's also this idea of obedience and prudence. There are certain things that are commanded, and then there are certain things that are good to do. There are certain things that we better not do, and there are certain things that would be better if we didn't do. And you understand that distinction. Not everything is got to do this. There are some things that, you know, this is an option. You want it, you can do it. But sometimes it's better not to. And then there's this idea of commandments, liberties, and opportunities for self-denial, which is what I've already talked about. And then the last thing is that marriage, it's not about you. Your marriage is not about you. And it is more, if it's about any human being, it's about the other person. Your husband, if you're the husband in the relationship, it's about your wife. If you're the wife, it's about the husband. It's both ways, it's about the other person. If it's about a human being, and to some extent it is. But really, the marriage was more about the gospel, think about the gospel, or think about the fact that our marriage represents how Jesus loved the church, how Jesus gave himself for the church. If you look over in Ephesians chapter 5, we've talked about that before. And if you think about that even, that should remind you it's not about you. It's not only about the gospel, but it's about the other person, because in the Jesus to the church relationship, yes, we know Jesus was God, but he wasn't sitting around in heaven saying, you know, how can I get some glory here? No, what he said is that he humbled himself to the death of the cross. He gave himself up. He put himself in a situation where he didn't have to be, because he's God already. There's nothing more glorious than being God. But he decided he would find his glory, he would find his praise in perfecting us, in making us better. So take that and think about that in terms of your own marriage. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about the other person, and it's about Jesus. Try to keep that in mind. All right, I probably don't have any time to do this last thing, but I'm going to go ahead and throw it out at you anyway. That's the lesson, chapter 7. Next week we'll start chapter 8.